Hear that? Up there in that tree?
Oh, yeah.
Tweet, tweet.
It's me and all my homies love native manu, and it's about to start.
Yes, te whānau, this is me and all my homies love native manu, and this week we are talking about the karoro, the southern black-backed gull. And here with me, as always, to talk about our precious taonga, our precious native manu, is the Birdman, is Pete Toner. Welcome to the studio, Pete.
Oh, morena, Liv. Always good to be here.
Good to have you too, brother. Pete, we are talking about the karoro this week. Yes. Can you please give us the classification of this manu?
Yes, they are native. They're definitely not threatened. They're very abundant around the
yes,
motu.
Yes, they are.
And there's five subspecies of this gull around the globe.
Mm.
And our subspecies is also found around the southern hemisphere, southern Australia, South America, and most of the subantarctic islands in the Arctic Peninsula. And it's the most common gull in Aotearoa.
Yes. Yes. Wow, that's great. And it's, yeah, we'll get into it a bit more later, but it's the biggest, it's a bigger than your usual gull.
Yeah, biggest gull in Aotearoa. so they've adapted really well to humans, and their population exploded during the 20th century with open landfills, sites. Plenty of good tucker in there. Abattoir waste outfalls that just chucked all the offal and scraps and stuff out of waste pipe into the ocean.
Yeah.
And also you had like fish factories and port environments with lots of scraps, and the urban environments providing lots of food waste and scraps to be scavenged.
Yep.
And land cultivation also, you know, provides new food sources. So got over a million birds in Aotearoa.
Wow.
However, with abattoirs not now cleaning up their act, landfills being closed operations, general cleaning up of food processing and the environment, I think numbers are starting to decline.
Okay.
But some decline's okay because the numbers were inflated by our wasteful practices. So maybe more of an equilibrium will be reached.
Interesting, yeah. And they're only two native bird species in New Zealand that have no protection, and the karoro is one of them.
Yes, and the spur-winged plover.
Mm.
And I can understand the plover not being protected. They're bloody noisy, aggressive birds. They are. And they arrived from Aussie about 1932.
Yeah.
They make a nuisance of themselves. And the karoro has a bad reputation, so it's not protected.
Yep.
But I think that's unfair, or maybe not. We'll find out.
We'll get into it a bit more. Yeah, really, really interesting. And I hope there's no spur-winged plovers listening. but yes, a significant bird for Māori. You go into this, Pete, because this is
your in one of my bird reference books, it had a note that the name Kararo could be broken down into ka being short for waka, and roro is to be out front of something. So the name meant the bird out in front of the waka.
Oh.
And that sort of makes a lot of sense, as the karoro often accompanies boats, but I couldn't find any other references to validate that. But it's a cool story.
A cool pūrākau anyway.
Yeah.
And they were a traditional food source for kaitahu.
Yep.
And although they're not protected under the Wildlife Act, it is in the Crown Settlement Deed with kaitahu that they are a taonga species for kaitahu. And any conservation work, any work done with the karoro in Te Waipounamu needs to be done in consultation or with kaitahu. So
yeah, that's good.
That's pretty cool.
At least there's someone looking out for them,
Shout out kaitahu. Another reference notes that the manu were not preferred food for Māori. but in times of low food supply, both birds and eggs would be eaten.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, interesting. I wonder what's like...
Maybe they're a bit salty or something.
I love that. And next, you've written, Pete, early Māori used to keep cuddled or as pets.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was fascinating. Yeah. And they sort of trained them to feed on caterpillars and insects that were attacking the kumara crop.
Oh.
So I think because they're so food orientated, if you keep offering them food, they'll just come and hang out with you and say, this is all right.
Kind of like us, eh, Bo?
Yeah, that's right.
And it was thought to be a bad omen if cuddledaw were seen inland.
Yeah.
But now we see quite a few of them inland.
Yeah, because farming, townships and that. So there's food sources inland.
Exactly.
Traditionally, they were more coastal birds.
Yeah.
But that's all changed.
Yeah. So with the human intervention and, well, kind of industrial intervention by Europeans and Aotearoa, our manu have cuddled or have
just
moved inland.
Their behaviour.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. And so whakatauki for you all. We've got three here.
Yeah.
Anō he cuddledaw e topa ana I runga e ngā kaimoana. Ooh, what does that speak to, Pete?
Like a black-backed gull soaring above seafood.
Great stuff.
So it's used to describe someone who's sort of ever present and watchful or quick to take advantage of an opportunity, much like the gull circling over the food.
That's awesome. I really like that one.
Yeah.
And like take your chances, go for
exactly.
it, you know? I like that. Next whakatauki, me te remu kārōrō. Oh, what is that, Pete?
Yeah, like the tail of the black-backed seagull, this saying was applied to the appearance of the waka stern as it propelled itself away from the shore. That's quite poetic.
And cool.
It's great.
And I think it's, you know, a lot of design is based on the appearance and how our animals move through the world. Yeah,
yeah,
and that's really cool.
Yeah. I like that one.
I've forgotten the word for it, but anyway. And the last whakatauki, he cuddled all.
Mimicry.
Yeah, mimicry.
Biomimicry.
Yeah, and design.
Something like that.
Yeah. He cuddled all inu tai. Ooh.
Yeah, I love this one. A black-backed gull that drinks the tide.
Mm.
And it refers to a person that lives by the sea.
Do black
a salty old dog sort of thing. It's great.
Does it drink seawater? Or is that
think they're often on the tidal mark as sort of dead crustaceans and bits of scavenged food sort of flow in with the edge of the tide. They're on the edge saying, "Oh, good tucker here."
Love that.
Yeah.
It's kind of just like they're accumulating random things. Have you heard of the phrase called hot girl dinner?
No.
It's kind of just like where you eat really random things for dinner.
Right.
Like some grapes and maybe a sausage out of your fridge and a piece of lettuce. So maybe the cuddledaw is having a hot girl dinner.
Yes.
But yeah, how would you describe this manu?
Oh, no doubt the gangster of the manu kingdom in Aotearoa. They are troublemakers, they are bullies. They predate on eggs and chicks of Tonga native species, like the tarapuka, the black-billed gull, the tarapanga, the red-billed gull, the tūturifatu, the New Zealand dotterel, and the kaki, the black stilt, and the river braided river system.
And
system, the problem there.
Taraiti, the fairy tern, as well,
which
is one of our most endangered birds.
Yeah. So that's no good.
No.
They steal food from the hardworking taranui, the Caspian terns that dive and catch fish. And then the karoro swoops in and scares the taranui into dropping the catch. And then they swoop down and collect the stolen fish.
oh, my God.
They harass kahu. And I often see the tussle between the kahu and the karoro over washed-up koi carp at Maraetai Bay.
Mm.
And it's sort of a 50-50 who wins that stoush. Sometimes a coyote says, nah, this is my meal, you bugger off.
I suppose they're quite evenly matched in their size, eh?
But sometimes if the kararo swoops in, the coyote says, too much hassle and flies away. So, and then on farm, they can sometimes attack cast sheep, which...
When a sheep gets sheep rolled, onto,
sort of
its
rolled onto their back with bloat or pregnancy or heavy fleece and they can't get up. And they can attack newborn lambs. So, they've got attitude in spades and probably some control here and there is necessary.
Yep. We'll help protect our... It's hard, eh? Because it's help protect our native manu species that are under threat. But also in a normal ecosystem.
Yeah, this, you get that.
This is what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
But with human intervention.
Exactly.
It's not sustainable anymore. So, it's hard. It's a tricky one.
Yeah. So largest gull species, 60 centimetres long, wingspan of 1 to 1.4 metres wide. That's quite wide.
Very wide.
Beautiful white plumage on underparts and head. They've got a black back, yellow bill with this little red spot near the tip of the lower bill, palish yellow sort of greenish legs.
Okay, fashion.
Yeah, but interesting, the juveniles are often mistaken for another species because they quickly grow to a similar size, but they're sort of a dark mottled brown with black bill and legs and takes about 3 years to gain that adult plumage.
So kind of looking more like a petrel or...
Yeah, or a skua or something. Yeah,
okay.
So that's interesting.
That is very interesting.
And then they also can drink seawater. They've got that sort of salt
so
filtering.
So they can drink seawater.
Yeah, yeah. So they filter the salt out of their noses, like those tube-nosed manu.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a really cool adaptation. I really like this
one. That's really, really clever because... In their natural environment, they could spend a long, long time at sea. So
they
need to drink.
Need a new way.
And I did read that they can stay on the wing flying at sea for up to 28 days without landing, which seems incredible.
Are they stopping to sleep?
Not stopping at all. Well, they've got that semi-hemispheric... sleep thing.
Yes, the semi-hemispheric sleep where they can turn off half of their brain for a few seconds,
exactly.
Rest that side of the brain, but keep flying.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Very, very cool.
But yes, we mentioned previous, kind of based around all parts of the motu now, but do you want to talk a bit more to that, Pete? And then also what do they, we've talked a bit about what do they chow down on?
Yeah, found all around the motu, but not in alpine or forested areas.
Yes.
They do like coastal areas, urban areas, and farmland because of the food available. They eat lots of things. In one of my reference books, I got excited about this. They said they have a Catholic diet. And I thought, what the heck are the religious manu?
What is a Catholic diet?
And I thought that made sense because all of the manu, the kararo really needed Sunday confessions to deal with their multitude of discretions.
Yeah, hard out.
Transgressions. So then, but then I realised Catholic in this context just meant a wide-ranging omnivorous diet.
Oh, okay.
And I was a bit disappointed at that point.
Damn.
Yeah. Anyway, they eat starfish, crustaceans, sea snails, bivalves, which are like pippies and mussels.
Yeah.
And they've got this interesting practice. They grab the pippy or something, they fly up high and they drop it onto either hard sand or rocks or the road.
And if you've been at a beach with kararo on it, you've definitely seen this. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's cool. And they eat fish, animal and fish carcasses, eggs and chicks, waste food products, offal. They can swallow rats whole. They've got big throats like the karuirui, the pied shag.
Yeah.
And they hoover up worms and insects on farms as the fields are ploughed. And then they hang around city parks and wharves and wherever people are and scavenge food scraps.
Oh,
so they're very opportunistic.
They are very opportunistic. Yes. Yep. And in terms of breeding, Pete, are we talking monogamy or polyamory or?
I think they're monogamous. Yes, yeah. I think they are.
Yeah.
They're pretty dedicated to each other. there's colonial or solitary nesting.
What the hell was that?
Well, most, whether they breed in big groups, in big colonies, and mostly they breed in colonies on coastal islands or steep headlands or sand and shingle spits or islands and riverbeds. And they can have colonies of, you know, 100 plus pairs.
But they can
do it solitary as well.
Okay. And I also read there's a couple colonies in New Zealand where there's over 1,000 breeding pairs.
Yeah, lots of them, yeah. Yeah. So they've got bulky nests, sort of made of grass and small sticks, or sometimes scrapes in the sand with nest lining in it. They lay 1 to 5 eggs, but mostly 3.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of large grey-green eggs with dark splotches on them. They're laid between October and January. They share incubation for about 23, 26 days. And then the chicks fledge after about 7 or 8 weeks, and both parents feed the chicks.
Wow, a beautiful co-parenting.
Yeah.
Equal relationship
they
there. Some threats. The cuddledaw are generally more of a threat to others than being under threat themselves.
Yeah. And this thing, and in nesting colonies.
Oh my gosh.
In nesting colonies, one parent has to always guard the eggs and the chicks.
Of course.
Otherwise, a neighbouring kararu will swoop in for a quick takeaway meal.
Oh my God. I can't
So they have a very loose moral code.
I can't believe you said quick takeaway meal. That's really funny.
Well,
that's what it is, though.
It is.
Yeah.
And so there are kararu control programs, particularly to protect those Tonga bird species in the braided river systems. So the eggs are pricked or toxins are used to control their numbers.
Yeah.
Airports are a problem because, you know, if they're quite big birds and they can take out a jet engine. So
that's so powerful. Imagine being so big you could take out a jet engine.
Yeah, it'd be a very momentary sense of achievement, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, a quick flash of glory.
Yes. So, yeah, they're not a threatened manu.
Yes.
They are much maligned and somewhat unfairly, or maybe not. They're gangsters, yes, and cannibals, but they're just kind of doing what they do.
Yeah.
And I love watching them at the beach.
Me too.
And it doesn't feel like a New Zealand beach without the cry of that gull.
Exactly.
It's so, you know, reminiscent of being at the beach.
It really is. It's
awesome.
Yeah, a great manu, a complicated story, but
yeah,
we love it. We love it nonetheless. And you've got a song, as always, to play, Pete.
Yes.
What is the song today?
A song by Jin Wigmore called Black Sheep. And the kararu seems to be the black sheep of the manu family, so it seemed like a good song.
Yep, I so agree with you there. Yeah. Thanks, Pete.
All right, kia ora.
Wine. If I have to fall, then it's
Isn't that beautiful?
That was Me and All My Homies Love Native Manu, only on 95 BFM.